Let me ask you this. Have you heard anything about her over being, her ODing and being put in a freezer?
What?
You've
No, I
not
haven't
heard
heard that
that?
one.
Okay. All
Who
right.
said that?
It was just a friend of mine that I know said that it was told to her that her body was seen in a deep freezer.
Her body was seen. See, if her body was seen in deep freeze, why ain't nobody said nothing about that? You know,
Yeah.
why ain't nobody reported it?
Yeah.
'Cause my boss had been telling her body was found. Just the other day, somebody said her body was found, and it was found in the river, and I was like, I don't hear nobody saying it. I don't hear the news mentioning it. I don't, you know, why ain't this been, broadcast?
Yeah. No,
But
she's.
trust me, I've been doing my best. You know, just, I've been keeping in contact with Jeff and Haley. I've been trying to, I ain't trying really too much keep in contact with Christina because she really.
Welcome to The Truth Lies Between on case number two, Jessica Van Zandt Dietzel. And this is going to be episode three, part two. Unfortunately, there's going to be another part as well because our conversation was just too long. I've been trying to edit it and cut it and cut things out. And I don't want to do that. And this episode is already longer than I would like. It's going to be about an hour. I don't like doing that. People lose interest quickly. It's just not something I want to do. So then we're going to have another episode. And that'll have the rest of our conversation. And then it's going to go into a sneak peek at episode four, which is going to be about Johnny Lemon, who gave a very, very important tip. And AJ, her boyfriend at the time of her disappearing. We'll have screenshots and whatnot. That's episode four. So when I release episode three, part three, which will be the end of part three, and the reason this episode is so important is because it's on Kenny. And Kenny was her baby father and, had the aggravated stalking. It's just a really important topic. And at the end of it, I'll give you guys a little preview of the following episode. So I'm sorry that we had to draw this out so long. Once again, you can find these podcasts on our Facebook at Missing Person Cases Network, as well as the YouTube, same thing, Missing Person Cases Network. There's another Facebook page called Destination Unknown, which just deals with addiction addicts, missing addicts, missing and mentally ill. Our Instagram is missing_persons_network. Twitter, the_MPC network. And you can find the podcast on any podcast platform by simply typing in the name. If there's anything specific you'd like us to touch upon, now we already have a set schedule on what we're going to talk about. This case is still active, so that can expand. What we're going to talk about today is the conversation that you heard last week with Kenny Mann. And we're not even going to touch upon Sam. I don't think he's guilty. I think he might be lying about a few things, but not anything important. If you feel differently, please put it in the comments. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please share, subscribe, give it a like, and hit that bell so you don't miss the next one. Facebook, same thing, like, share, yada, yada, yada. Has to be done because this case needs more awareness. I know with more awareness, it'll be solved. So, you just heard Kenny Mann being, quote unquote, surprised or taken aback by that comment. But now we're going to analyze the rest. I hope you enjoy.
Okay, so let's get into K-Man now. We heard the conversation on the last episode, which we'll be talking about later on. But first, what's his deal? What was his childhood like? Things like that, if you know.
So Kenny was passed from home to home. He was raised mostly in foster care. He never really had much contact with his actual biological family. And he never really was raised by anyone. He was passed on from home to home.
So essentially, he's never really even felt love or cared for, right?
I don't feel like you would. I mean, as a kid, from a very early age, he was passed around and just, you know, pillar to post in different people's homes. So I don't feel like he ever felt secure or loved.
And this next question, I don't think I've ever even really asked. Do you think that dysfunction played a role in his dysfunction with Jessica?
Absolutely. He had no example to look up to or no good example of how you should treat a woman, how you should be in a serious, committed relationship, how you should raise a family.
Okay. Interesting. Now, do you know, I'm not sure if you know, was he a good father? Was he even a father?
I don't really think he ever was a father.
Did you ever know when they got married or anything like that?
No.
Okay. But they weren't divorced. So were they legally married, though?
They're still legally married.
Now, that's interesting. She's only 20. They're only so young.
Yeah, she was young.
Was it like a wedding or like a courthouse, you know?
I think it was more of a courthouse deal, but I'm not sure on that one.
And it was it specifically because they were having a child?
I think that was probably the main reason.
Right, that's what I figured, because I know religion is big down south, right?
Right.
All right, well, so because there's no real documentation of that time, and so that important, let's go into him older and the things that he would do to Jessica and let's first talk about how he got Elena taken away.
So he would just make calls to the Department of Children and Families. A lot of those calls were unfounded, but he would repeatedly make calls and accuse Jessica of all kinds of different things. Jessica wanted a family. She wanted him there. She wanted to raise Elena. And, you know, he would go off and sell drugs, do drugs, treat her the way that, I mean, you guys will see in the video that he treated her. And he stalked her. He would just try to do anything to make her life a living hell. And at one point, when she was going to a visitation with Elena after she had lost custody, he actually physically assaulted her in the car on the way to the visitation, and she wasn't able to see Elena.
Now, he was her husband, and so isn't he kind of the reason why she didn't have an address? So isn't that like a big part in why Elena was actually taken away?
It was, and
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, he wasn't providing for her, and she had to raise a child.
Right.
Her own. But my whole thing is why? Why want to do that to your wife and baby mother? And then why, as you guys will see, drag her through the mud, like, and then put it on Facebook Live? Do you know if there's any mental health issues there, or?
I don't know that there's a mental health issue as much as there's a drug issue. I mean, he sells drugs, does drugs, hangs out with people who do drugs. He honestly has, I would say, a mean or an evil streak. He wasn't just mean to Jessica. He tried to destroy her life. He literally went on a campaign against her. He stalked her. He would find her in public places and berate her in front of random people. It wasn't just, you know, they didn't get along. If she didn't do what he wanted to do, or he didn't want to be with her at the time, he wouldn't just leave her alone. He would just attack her in every way that he could think to attack her. He had stalked her at a birthday party at her mom's house, went by and took pictures of license plates that were parked in the yard. he had, as you'll see in the video, followed her around calling her names. That's not the only time he'd done that. He would talk bad about her to anybody who would listen. He called her the heroin junkie, heroin merry-go-round. He accused her of being the police. He accused her of being a snitch. He accused her of a lot of things. And it was almost like a campaign to destroy her. And he did say that he would destroy her.
Right. So there's a lot of things I read and heard, some screenshots I read, where he makes threats, like legit threats. Which brings me to this point. Now, he was in jail on stalking charges, not the most recent jail stint, but, and what was the actual charge? It was called something else, worse than just stalking.
It was aggravated stalking.
Aggravated stalking. And then he gets out of jail on a different charge just 5 days before she ends up missing. I had a lot of red flags about him, and still do, but a little bit less now. Do you think he would have been that brazen to just get out and go and do that?
I absolutely think he's that brazen.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way he talks, I mean, I guess if you look at how he talks to her and treats her, I agree.
And you have to understand that he's not, the way he portrays himself in that video, the way that he's talking, that slang speech, all of that is an act. Kenny has a lot of different sides. You'll even notice in the phone call that he speaks differently. It depends on who he's with and who he's around. He's very good at manipulating people. He was very good at manipulating Jessica. She would be done, she would be gone, and he would bring up things from her childhood and, you know, threaten to commit suicide if she didn't come back, stalk her friends. I mean, he's very good at manipulation. Everybody just thinks he's some stupid drug dealer that walks around acting like an idiot, but that's only one side of who he is.
Oh, so Kenny's doing all these bad things to Jessica. And even in the video, she doesn't, like, I wouldn't say she's not, she barely even speaks back. When she speaks back, she kind of just says some facts, like that he's not a man, and other things. But, I'm not sure when the date was, but during all of this, some of the arguing between the two, she makes a post on Facebook, and it wasn't a joke, it was a real post. Basically telling people that he needs prayers. Now, to me, that speaks a lot on his character.
I think it does, too, because she, even everything he had put her through, she still wanted him to do okay. Even if he wasn't in her life, even if he wasn't in Elena's life, she still wanted good things for Kenny. She always wanted good things for Kenny. You know, she really wanted a family. And that's one of the things he would use to manipulate her with. And even though she was going through it with him and she had restraining orders, she thought they were worthless. She has ripped up a restraining order before because it wasn't taken seriously. Even though all that was going on, she still wanted him to do better. She wanted him to get better. Jessica was trying to improve her own life in the fall of last year. She had entered treatment. She was trying to do the right things and she wanted the right things for her friends and family.
You talked about manipulation before that, and some people will say if she was so afraid and had all his restraining orders, why would she go and put money on his books? Why would she still talk to him? And I need people to understand, I didn't never understand this part. She was, first of all, she was physically beaten by him, and just emotionally, that was his verbal punching bag. You see it right in the video. People don't understand that the victims, so she wants a family. I'm sure that she grew up as a little girl just wanting a family. Now she has a kid and a husband. So I think that she would always go back to him. But if he changed, I think she would definitely have gone back to him. But it's almost like she was doing anything to kind of save the family. Like, why would you go and put money on the books of someone who wouldn't even answer your messages and talks to you like that? Do you think that if Kenny had smartened up his act, do you think that she would have gone back with him?
I think she would have. And I also think it comes back to a lot of victims of domestic violence are manipulated by their abuser. And it's a classic example in this case. He used things from her childhood, the fact that her father had committed suicide. And he would say that when she would leave, you know, oh, I'm just going to kill myself. You're going to make me kill myself. And then Elaine is not going to have a father, just like you didn't have a father. He was a master manipulator. A lot of abusive men are, and people don't understand until they've been in that situation why she would go back. She would go back because she didn't want to be responsible for his suicide. She didn't want to be responsible for him ruining his life. And he would always threaten that with her. And she was also scared. I mean, if you listen to the way he talked to her, he had physically attacked her. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of manipulation. There's a lot of guilt, I think, if something had happened. I mean, I don't know that he was really going to kill himself, but if he had, I mean, then Elena grows up without a father. And he had said, it would be your fault. So I think that's the reason that she went back. It's a cycle. And, I mean, it's classic. That's what the abuser does.
Yeah, see, a lot of people just don't get that. And so I've been following these cases for like almost 2 years now. And back in the day, it was basically a missing persons case was usually a toddler or a young child that got, you know, walked away and got taken or got taken from somewhere. It wasn't cases like you see now. I mean, you look on Facebook and everywhere. And what it basically consists of are missing addicts, missing mentally ill, and missing people due to domestic violence. Those are like 80% of the cases that are out there. I mean, it became so out of hand that the government had to create their own database known as NAMIS. That's why it was created, because they had needed a way to track it and have a uniform system. So a lot of police departments, they don't have the resources, they don't have the manpower, and they just... I see a lot of missing persons departments that are not open on weekends and they only work 9 to 5, right? So I guess, like I always say, what, people can't go missing on the weekends now?
Right.
It's, you know, they should be staffed all the time. Also, police departments don't, I'm not going to say don't care about them, but they have to perform. Okay, that's how you're measured. That's how you do your job. So that means solving murders. Missing people is not a stat that they probably really even tracked with police departments. It's tracked on like federally, but no one's being pressured by like the mayor for just missing people. But murders, yeah. You know, theft and stuff like that, yeah. So there's not training. And another problem is the communication between the family and the police. It's just lax. Resources are horrible. So do you think if Albany had taken this a little bit more seriously, Kenny wouldn't have been able to really go near her or allow this to happen?
Well, we don't know at this point that he's responsible. And in my eyes, it's still, you know, there's a good chance.
Right. But yeah, so maybe I can reward that, but no one knows. But
right. But I do feel like precious minutes were lost, precious hours, precious days. The report wasn't filed when it should have been. Tips were overlooked. It's just like they just thought Jessica just went off by herself and they put out a third-party information on a tip and they left that. And to this date, that has not been retracted by the Albany Police Department. You know, that made people assume that she just got into a car at the Luxury Inn and she was where she wanted to be, which was not the case. As everyone knows, she loves Elena. That is her world. Jessica had made some poor decisions, but her daughter is still her world. That her birthday passed, she didn't call. The family knows when something's wrong. And I feel like a lot of times the miscommunication between the police department and the family is the police department sees people go missing all the time. Addicts, mentally ill, and they are. They're where they want to be. They're on a 3-day bender. But the family knows when it's different. The family knows the patterns. The police department doesn't know the patterns. The police department doesn't know how much someone calls, what, you know, how they text, what they say, who they stay in contact with. And I think a lot of times it's not taken seriously right out the gate when it should be, because those first hours and days are so critical. Everyone knows that. But just as in Jessica's case, it was delayed, 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 delayed. And I've honestly, it was delayed for weeks as far as I'm concerned with the Albany Police Department. They weren't taking anything seriously. And her family knew. A mom knows when something's wrong with her daughter. And they just don't take it serious.
Yeah, and I see that everywhere. It's always these small towns, usually down south, where I see this. There's also usually an angle of corruption. So now, going back to the police and Kenny, do you think that, so it looks like from some of the pictures, Kenny's flashing money. I mean, not much money, but money. And just trying to make himself seem like something that he really is probably not. So when we talk about Albany Police Department and that third party story, I've never seen that. I can't believe it was done. And it still hasn't been retracted. I actually think it was not even a real tip and that it might have been completely fabricated by the police department. And the only reason you would do that is if there's, I don't even really like saying this, and I've only said it on like one other case. I've said that some sheriff's offices are terrible, but I'm not implicated that there could be something else going down in the background. Because a lot of these small, good old boy people are getting kickbacks, just like the mafia used to give. But it's even worse because the mafia's not around anymore, and good old boys club is thriving. Sex trafficking, huge money, bigger than drugs. Is there any way that maybe Kenny Man knows that's what happened to her, and knows that maybe the police know that? And do you think that would even be a possibility?
Well, first off,
and would the clout to know something like that?
First off, I think sex trafficking is a huge possibility in her case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Secondly, I do know that that tip, there was an actual female there. She was actually seen getting into the car, but contact was made with that female, and it was not Jessica.
But who called the tip in? Do you know? I'm saying,
we don't know. We don't know. It was a third party tip, so it could have been anybody.
Yeah, and she could have been getting in the car, and maybe a cop saw it. Like, I just don't. Why? I don't know.
And I've never seen it not be retracted. Ever. That's my problem with it. It's not retracted. Right. If you screwed up and you made a mistake, you thought that's who it was, why up until this point is it not retracted? And we were telling them, that's not Jessica. I mean, there were members of her family saying, that's not Jessica. This girl is not Jessica. She didn't even look like Jessica. So why? I would direct that question to the Albany Police Department. Why has it not been retracted? Why did you put out a tip from third-party information? Police departments don't do that. I mean, there's a lot of red flags there.
Right, and usually police departments never give out the actual tip, like word for word, number one. And it's a tip, it's a rumor. Should never be told to the public. Because like you said, so when you first messaged the page about the case, and I read that, I was like, oh God, another one of these. And I don't mean that in necessarily a bad way. These are the cases I follow, addicts, mentally ill. So I see it a lot. And a lot of cases, just like this one, the mom knows. Exactly like you said, she didn't call on the birthday. I'm sure that Christina had started to get a little worried before that because she wasn't getting responses. But that was it. That was the, you know, the tipping point.
That was the moment.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
That was the moment. That was it. She was already nervous. She already didn't know what was going on with her, but that was it. When that didn't happen, she knows Jessica better than anyone. Jessica, if she was able, would have called, texted something her daughter on her birthday. She would not have forgotten her daughter's birthday. There's just no way.
Absolutely. And no, I've actually seen this before, which is sad. There was another one in Indiana. With Donald Westfall, a sheriff's office employee, actually wrote, definition of a missing person is someone that does not want to be found. And this is an employee of the sheriff's office. But the mother knew he was missing because his money came in that he gets every month. and it was in there still. She knows that if he had relapsed and he had money in his account, it'd be gone.
Absolutely.
And that's not the only one. There's plenty more. And it's but in my opinion, what Albany did is literally a hindrance to the case, because those are not facts. And all it did was make people who shared this information for awareness not share it as much, not care as much, because there's so many other cases where people are, quote unquote, seen getting in willingly.
Right.
And she wasn't, like I said, how was I supposed to know that? It's all over it's still on the police and on the news companies. They still have it in there. They haven't, no one's retracted, have they?
No, they haven't. And that was when I actually first made contact with you. That was in early March, but it was weeks after Jessica first went missing. I was, you know, searching groups and other ways that we could get awareness. And immediately, that's what you were able to bring up. You weren't able to bring up anything else. That was it. That was all that was out there. So we would see that even, you know, when we're putting out, you know, Jessica's missing, people would send us those articles repeatedly. No, she was at the Luxury Inn. She willingly got into a vehicle. And right. So much information was lost, I believe, from that exact thing. And news organizations had put it out. And then, you know, missing persons pages just like yourself had put it out, not in a bad way. They didn't know. There was no way for them to know. That's the information that was given. You trust that the sheriff's department and the news has it right. And they didn't. And repeatedly, that story was asked to be retracted. And to this date, I don't believe they've ever put a retraction in.
Now, do you think that possibly the person who's responsible, maybe Kenny, called that tip in?
It's very possible.
Because people who meant something or heard something, but then they read that and say, oh no, it couldn't have been because she was seen on this day after that day.
Absolutely. I think someone threw it out there to cover right. their tracks.
And it's a very good chance that it's someone who's responsible. So why doesn't Albany release a name of who said that not credible tip?
Because I don't know.
You said the tip, so, and it's a clear lie, why can't they tell who it is? Or at least look into it. I don't think they're looking into anything. I'm pretty sure that they still haven't even filed a missing persons report.
To my knowledge, they have not. So,
right. And all they would do at first is a bolo.
And that's what, that's as far as Christina got. And, you know, in the very beginning, she was told when she's telling them, you know, my daughter's missing. This is not like her. You know, mom, that's addict behavior. She'll come home. They were very dismissive. Not only, you know, my issue with the whole thing is I understand that police departments aren't resourced. I understand that there's issues with that. My experience with the Albany Police Department, and not just with Jessica's family, is that they're cold and uncaring. And the way that Christina was disrespected, and it goes high up. I'm not going to throw names out there tonight, but it goes high up within the Albany Police Department, the way that she was disrespected and talked to as the mother of a missing girl is absolutely insane. The way she was dismissed from the beginning, and it's not just her. It took Curtis Roberts, is another missing person in Albany. It took his family days to beg for a police report, and they basically had to call in a favor from someone they knew in political office to even get a missing persons report on Mr. Roberts, aka Blue. It's insane. And he was not a drug addict or mentally ill. He had some health problems, and it wasn't like him. They knew his track, but they also wouldn't file a report on him. They wouldn't file a report on Jessica. And even working through the case, they've been dismissive. They've been disrespectful, downright disrespectful to Christina. And why? I cannot wrap my head around why you would be disrespectful to her family.
Right, right. And as far as I'm concerned, Christina has pretty much been the lead on this case. You have other agencies that have stepped in and done amazing things. And I've already commended them for that because I've never, you don't see that. Usually it's one agency trying to push it off on the other. They don't want to take it. But they have to go to this agency to report, that agency tells you have to go to that agency report. The way it should be, this is why these cases just don't get solved. They don't have any movement, is because of the bullcrap like this. Imagine wasting days going from one to the other to the other.
Absolutely.
You're missing so much time. And it's, a person should be able to pretty much walk in any police station and fill out a report. And the cops should be able to put that report in the right place. It's not like you have a million people walking in every day for a missing persons report. I know in Rhode Island, we have maybe like 10 a year. It's not going to do much of a hold up for that cop to then send a fax to another agency instead of having all this runaround. And then the family's calling this one, and it's crazy. And it allows stuff like this to happen. So let me go back to Canning for a minute. This town is flooded with meth, correct?
Absolutely.
And heroin as well, right?
Yes.
Now, was Kenny a user, a dealer, or like both? I never really understood that completely. I pretty much understand he's a user from my understanding.
He's both. Not a big dealer, I don't think, but a small-time dealer. If you look at the 13 charges he has that he's actually, you know, his bond was revoked on those charges, but he was released, you know, 5 days before Jess went missing on bond for those charges. They're trafficking charges. So, and drug charges. He was a small, what I would say, like a small-time dealer. But there's an interesting fact, you know, right before Jessica goes missing, and somewhere between the fall of last year and when Jessica goes missing, Kenny had a come-up in the streets, which just meant he was flush with cash and he was flush with drugs. At least that's the information that I'm getting. So where did he get that from? Because he's never been a big-time dealer. How did he get his hands on all this dope and all this cash? It's a good question.
Right. And that just made me think of something else. So we've discussed how we think it's possible that Kenny could have harmed her. Do you think he would have sold her into sex trafficking?
He actually made specific threats about that. So I absolutely think that's possible.
Because, I mean, that, like I said, people may not know it, but it's a bigger industry than drugs. It's huge. And Jessica would have been a higher-end girl. Not to really get into this, I don't, you know what I mean? I'm just saying she's a pretty girl. A lot of guys like her. That she would make a pimp a lot of money.
It sounds awful to say, but she stood out, and she's beautiful, and she had a, you know, she's not, Jessica wasn't big into drugs yet. She hadn't been, you know, on drugs for years, or do you see, she still had her beauty, and yeah, she would make a pimp a lot of money, and he had specifically threatened to get his money's worth out of her and things of that nature, which would make you think that maybe he had. And he's been known to hang out with some pimps. He's been known to hang out with prostitutes. So I think it's entirely possible. Is that how he got his come up? Maybe.
Because I'm sure that someone would pay big bucks, and it wouldn't be very difficult for them to do it. They could either take the drugs or just tell them she's going somewhere else, and then it wouldn't be very difficult because she didn't necessarily trust him, but I don't think she would have thought that he would have done that.
Yeah, not so much that she did trust him to some extent, but she's also newly into this. So, you know, she's the perfect target. She's newly into this. She's still beautiful. She did use drugs. So, and under the influence, she could have made a bad decision to get in a car. They could have told her, you know, she was going anywhere and taken her. It wouldn't have been hard. And if you know sex trafficking, which you do, she makes the perfect target.
Right. So, I think now we should get into his conversation. You mentioned earlier that someone said that Etherden looked worse than Kenny in as far as conversations, and I agree 100%. There is one thing that bothers me. It's a clip. I played it at the beginning of this podcast episode, and it's when the infamous freezer is mentioned. You can literally, I can feel the energy shift. So drastically, I was like, whoa. You know, and he really wanted it. So I know you also said that maybe he thought, oh, that must be true, but he wanted to know who said it, which makes me think that he was mad that someone said it.
It leads me to believe that as well. And he wanted to change the sub. He wanted to know who said it. And when she wouldn't give up who said it, then he wanted to change the subject back to Porter's Corner.
He also said that, you know, because he hadn't heard that it must not be true.
Right.
Which, to me, I'm thinking the opposite. Now that you said that, it probably is true. So I tell this to everybody that in these small towns, the rumors, right, there are so many rumors, but I noticed that usually, I'd say 90% of the time, the first rumors or repeated rumors are usually true. And we hear a lot about the river and the fridge and 62 pick, which we're going to get into all those things at a different date. Kenny had to have heard that. That couldn't have been the first time he heard it. That's what I'm trying to say.
If it's making it all the way back to her mother, there's no way. Right. Kenny being in the streets, he didn't hear 622 pick. And he knows.
Right. And that's connected to the freezer as well, correct?
Yes. I said her body was seen in a freezer at 622 pick, which is the home of his friends, which we'll get into later.
Right. And that's when Christina is calling Lee County and saying, it's Lee, right? Where she says, you know, somebody said that they saw my baby's face in a freezer.
Right. So actually, at that point in the investigation, only Albany Police Department was involved.
It sounds absolutely horrible. Each time I listen to it, I pick up on new things. I just think that he was so obsessed with her that he couldn't even really control himself on the phone. With what he was saying. And then we have Kenny Manman. These two would be at the top of my list. I believe they're probably at the top of law enforcement's list. Now, it was stated that they don't know each other, which we now know is a bold-faced lie. I can show you a screenshot of people who saw them together in Walmart. Now, are there any other links between the two?
They have a lot of the same friends. They ran in a lot of the same circles. They were seen at Walmart together. Wait, you just broke up really bad.
So you said the same circles. Now, what would that be? So Rigo Miller, is he close with Etherton?
He knows both of them.
Okay. Because I know Rigo and Kenny are close friends, right?
They're very close friends.
And that's 6-pick, right?
That's 622 pick. And around the time that Jessica goes missing, of course, Rigo's parents were out of town, and Kenny was seen over there at Rigo Miller's house.
So that's when the house was trashed and there was a dead dog, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, who knows what else happened there? And then we have the freezer story. Now, another thing that is brought up that I don't put any credibility in, because it's rare that it happens that someone overdoses and the people they're with go to the extent of hiding the body. Because if you get caught with that body, you can no longer say that that person's overdosed. They're going to think that you either hotshotted them or did something to them. It just doesn't make sense. So that's why when people say that, I don't believe that part's true, but usually what they say with it is possibly true. Because, so, you know, I've been looking into these cases for a while, and things that are said over and over, or at the very beginning, are generally true, even in the bigger cases at times, if it's in a small community. Everybody knows everybody. People talk. People want to sound cool and think they know extra stuff. So what they'll do is they'll take truths and put it in with lies. Every lie, there's some truth in it. We hear about an overdose. Now, I hear this in almost any time there's a missing addict. I hear this. Now, people need to realize that someone in their active addiction is most likely not going to overdose, unless it's not an accident, and the dealer or the person does it on purpose, put something in besides the drug or too much of that drug, and that's not really an overdose in my eyes. That's a murder because it was done intentionally. an active addict is usually not going to overdose. Usually, not all the time, but it's usually someone who relapses and comes back and tries to get back into that game. So, an overdose, you're not going to pick up the body and bring it places and try and hide it. If you get caught with the body, you're screwed. Regardless, doesn't matter, right? You're trying to move that body, that's a crime in itself. So I don't think that that holds any stock, unless it was done purposely, which is not an overdose. So we've also been hearing the river and 62 pick and the fridge. So we need to look at it and say, you know, where are the truths in these? Could more than one be true? And I'm just going to say this. Meth towns, yes, they could be true because bodies really do get moved. And they pay close attention to these groups and what people say. And I'm sure that she was moved. So there is a chance that she may have been in that freezer in the landfill. And Kenny hears that, right? And now she's in the river. Or, because if she was put in the river at first, obviously they can't dig her up because there's nothing to dig up.
Right.
So, it's still a possibility that Kenny could have tipped somebody off about that because of the way he reacts to it in the call. That's just my two cents on it. Just, unfortunately, if she's alive, it's sex trafficking, which honestly is very hard. Even though she may be alive, it's hard to get them out of it now.
Absolutely.
She checked off all the boxes of a possible sex trafficking situation because she does do drugs. She does have a little, like, you know, a little bit of a rough upbringing, I guess you could say, and her situation, right? So, Kenny or Etherton, now Panama City, okay? I looked up Panama City. A lot of sex trafficking down there. Isn't Panama City mentioned quite a bit?
It was mentioned quite a bit. Stephen Etherton actually said to someone at some point that he dropped that crazy bitch off in Panama City. You know, he, on the phone call, says, he hadn't seen her and he didn't know she left with a Mexican. Right. Trying to throw shade that way. But he had said multiple stories to multiple people. So one of the stories was that he dropped that quote-unquote crazy bitch off in Panama City. He has ties to Panama City, as we know. He's currently sitting in a jail in Panama City. Panama City is huge for sex trafficking. Like you said, Jessica, fits that description. A lot of people try to throw that off, you know, because they hope that someone's alive. Jessica actually does fit that very well.
Right. Yeah, she does. And plus, the parameters around sex trafficking have expanded so much that she's like a would be top for possibilities.
Right.
Because it'd be certain ages, certain looks, but now it's just a vast variety of trafficked people, men and women. Men get trafficked too. It's not just women. And it's, like I said, it's just, like, age is no longer a thing. Before, if you were, like, over 21, trafficking was not an option. Because it's sick, but the clients of these girls, they like them young.
Right.
It's sick.
But Jessica also looks very young. She does look very young.
That's why I'm saying Jessica's, like, you know, if you had a poster child for a possible sex trafficking case, I think Jessica would be it.
Right.
And that does give hope, like I said, but it could be a little bit of false hope. That's why I wouldn't want someone, you know, relying on that is what would happen. I think that the people involved are being very realistic about their expectations at this point. Only time will tell, right? How long has it been? 4 months?
It's been 4 months.
Almost. That's the thing. Yeah. Time keeps ticking. So something that's very important, as the time keeps going, the activity needs to be the same. And it's very difficult. You know, I've worked cases where like there'll be so much activity, even for like a full year. And then once it leaves the news or leaves articles or leaves new information, what's called, so a cold case is 8 months of no activity.
Right.
And by the time you have 8 months of no activity, that case has already been very cold. 8 full months is a lot. Usually what I see is if you don't handle information for like 2 months, it's difficult to get people back. It's sad because people will jump to another case and another case because it becomes a hobby for people, which can be dangerous. I mean, there's a lot of bad people in this.
Right. Well, if I have anything to do with it, it will never go cold until Jessica is home. One way or the other, we'll make sure she stays in the news and her face stays out there because she has a 3-year-old daughter. She has an entire family, and her family, she's very much loved and she's very much a big part of her family. Yes, she had struggles. Everyone does. And I don't want that to get lost because a lot of people have made it, you know, about that. It wasn't about that. Jessica is a good person. You can see with the stuff with Kenny, no matter what he did to her, she was asking for him to be prayed for. She has a good heart. She deserves just as much attention as anyone who's missing. They all deserve the same attention. You know that doesn't happen. But it's kind of why I became involved in this case, because I do have prior experience with another missing person who was thankfully found safe. And he didn't get that attention either because of his lifestyle. So it's sad, but it's true. But that's why this podcast is so important. That's why groups are so important. And it's so important that the community stays rallied around this family, because we can't let this case get cold.
Absolutely, and I've said this before, that you guys have done an amazing job with awareness, considering the circumstances that we have. The fact that, you know, COVID was going on, number one, and then we have the fact she's an addict. You know, then people look at it like, oh, she doesn't have her daughter. I'm not saying this is for me. I spread a lot of awareness on these cases, but as far as getting her on Nancy Grace, Dateline to do an article, that's amazing. You don't see that when there's any. So if someone isn't squeaky clean, like perfect, national news, that's for sure. And to make even local news, they'll get the one story basically saying, this is her name, age, here are her stats, she's this tall, weighs that much, these are her color eyes, and you'll have four different news companies who all say that same thing. Then you won't hear anything else about it. They'll never report on it again because they just assume that, oh, she is doing drugs somewhere. And it's horrible. It happens all the time. It's just, what can be done to change that?
I think it's up to us as a community to change that. The only reason Jessica has gotten this much attention is because of the volunteers. Everybody's familiar with the volunteers. And we've been out there, but the community support has been amazing as well. Like, the community will go to bat for us. When we have a question or why isn't this on the news, or, you know, we ask them to email producers of shows for us. They've done that. And I think us as a community coming together is part of the reason. It's the main reason that she's gotten the coverage that she has. We've had people reach out. I've personally reached out. Obviously, that's how we came into contact. It's just reaching out and getting the face out there. It sounds awful, but I approached it kind of like a political campaign. And we've just got to get it out there. And I think more people need to understand that. You have to get it out there. And you don't wait. It doesn't matter. As soon as someone goes missing, put it on Facebook. Make a group. Make a page. Get it out there. Start with the hashtags. Get attention. And it sounds awful, but you kind of have to sell it. You have to sell the story. You have to get it out there so that the media does pick it up. Because if you're just posting, oh, my so-and-so's missing and they're missing from here, no, make a hashtag. Make it catchy. Post every day. Christina posts multiple times a day. Just keep her face out there. And if you do have a missing person, my best advice is be loud, be obnoxious if you have to be. I mean, there's been times where I feel like I've been downright obnoxious, but I don't regret that because Jessica's face is out there.
Yeah, you guys have done amazing. The problem is, this is literally entertainment for people. Other people's pain is basically entertainment for people, and that's what brings a lot of the bad characters around.
Oh, and we've had our fair share of those. So that's something that I was totally unprepared for, that people will try and kind of, I don't know if they feel like we're getting attention. I never wanted the focus to be on us. So we've had our fair share of just people come out of the woodwork. I'm not sure if they think that they're going to get attention or make a name for themselves. I'm not really sure what it is, but there have been several. I'm not going to mention names tonight, but there have been several people that have come out, and it's just been, it's been crazy. It's almost like they want in on this, and it's not going in on something. The reason all of us got involved and volunteered for this is simply to bring Jessica home, regardless of what that means. If that means searching, we'll do it. If that means coming on a podcast, we'll do it. But people, I don't know if it's jealousy. I don't know what it is, but there have been some of the craziest stuff, and there are those people, and you just have to understand that social media is a double-edged sword. Getting involved in this is a double-edged sword. You're going to get hate. You're going to get crazy people, but you can't lose sight of your goal, and that's another thing. Don't get discouraged if, you know, you start getting some of that, and you get these crazy people calling you. I mean, oh, Lord, we've had them. Just move on from it and keep doing what you're doing. And you have to be on top of it. You have to call the detective. You have to call the news. You have to stay on top of this, because the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Unfortunately, that's how it works. So that would be my advice. And yeah, totally unprepared for the crazies that come out of the woodwork with this.
Right. And all the things you pointed out are true. It's all those reasons. But there's another reason too that I've seen, and where I really found out about these crazies was on the original reason I had the Truth Lies Between podcast on Carly Gousset. The crazies in that case have hindered the investigation very badly. And if you look at Jessica's case, Albany Police Department has hindered this investigation. So the crazies want you to talk about the drama, because then you're not talking about what happened. You're not talking about things that will drive something in someone's memory to solve the case. You're going off in tangents, and it's becoming a personal battle. And you know, and then there's another reason why people do this, and that's money. They scam the families. I've seen families scammed. It's hard. Like, if you had ever told me that this goes on, I'd be like, you're right. But another thing I'm going to say, people probably won't believe either, but the majority of the people do follow these cases. They're not in it for the right reason. And that's okay, because you need awareness anyways. So, but the problem is, the people stop spreading awareness. They don't talk about it to other people. They just end up gossiping. It becomes this like big gossip show. It's messed up, because you can't really present the case any other way. The more drama, the more people want to listen. Right, so if I talk about a lot of drama, people are going to want to be tuned in, which is good though, because everyone's aware of it. But if people are just gossiping, it then that's how lies are created. So it's very important to talk facts, and that brings me back to the tip again from Albany Police Department. I'm not sure if anybody has heard of this website. It's a big website and important in these cases, and it's Web Sleuths. And as cases gain traction, their web threads get longer and longer. And as the threads get longer and longer, more people are apt to go look up that web sleuths, right? Now, web sleuths only allows facts. And this is on there. The lie. It was on there. I don't know if it's still on there. I'll go and check. Because if you tell them, they will take it off. And I noticed that she only has a couple pages of threads. And I'm like, this is crazy. She was on Nancy Gray's Dateline. You know, Reddit is another big one to get awareness through, because you have a lot of like serious sleuthers on there. But like I said, it has to be off. And actually, now that I think about it, if Albany doesn't take that down, Web Sleuths will not take it down. I was very disappointed, because now, like I said, it draws people. I mean, I've seen cases that have hundreds of pages. can't believe that she only has that many, and it's important. So if that's up there still, I'm actually going to go and look and try to get it taken down. These are all tools that you can use, along with what you said with the hashtags and all that.
Right. And see, it's been asked multiple times for that to be taken down for that specific reason. I mean, a lot of people see that tip. It came from, you know, a news source, and it came from the Albany Police Department, so it has to be true. So how you're going to get it taken down? We've tried to get news stories taken down that are still up. There have been some news organizations that have not retracted the story but deleted it from their social media. So that's happened, but as far as it completely being like, you know, Albany Police Department coming out and saying this was not a credible tip, we disregard, we apologize. They literally published gossip. You want to talk about gossip? That's exactly what that was. It's a third-party tip.
So you're saying that some news companies just delete the whole article, period?
There were whole articles deleted from that tip, yes.
No, you know, that's ridiculous. So the awareness, that's crazy. You're just going to take the whole article down and then that's less articles on it. That's crazy. To me, that's like such a red flag. Why would they do that?
I don't know. They should have retracted the story. That's what I was pushing for. Absolutely.
Right, well, that's news stories where they'll update it and they'll update that story with the facts at the top and just say, you know, we were wrong, this was not true. That's crazy.
Well, I felt like when they deleted it, it kind of made it look like maybe she was found because, you know, somebody shared it and they go back on their Facebook and they're looking and now the story's gone. Well, she must have been found. I mean, honestly, if I didn't know, that's probably what I would assume, or that she was never missing in the first place. You see what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't retracted, it wasn't updated, it was removed.
Well, that tells me something else, too. There was this case in Oregon that I looked at, Danny Oberg, and there was, like, I think three different groups, and they were just going back and forth, bickering back and forth, really bad, so bad that the media wouldn't even come to the memorial.
Wow.
So, was the media asked to just delete it completely and not retract it by APD?
I think that's a good question for the media and the APD.
Because when it comes to the media, they always have to check with the police first.
Right.
I'm going to go look and see if she's on NamUs. If she's not, I'll submit it again. NamUs is so important. To me, it's like, up there, number one, or after you file the report, they need to be in NamUs. I know that there's some states now that require the police to put them in NamUs. I don't know why they all don't. They should. It's very simple. And it can't go into NamUs until that investigating officer approves it. So it would just make so much more sense for them to just enter it themselves. And the reason it's so important is because there are people who do care about these cases around the country, and they're trying to match up those to missing people. You know, police officers don't have the resources to do that. They can't be sitting there all day trying to match up a doe that was found in, I don't know, Mississippi for another case.
Right.
Another issue is that sometimes there was a case, this is terrible, where there was a body found, okay? And wherever it was found, I forget where it was. They had the wrong information. They said it was like a black guy. It was a white guy, right? And the family didn't find out for like a year. It took a whole year to realize that doe. Now the parents had called and called, and they said, nope, nothing. And he was sitting in the morgue for a year. That's another issue. How do you fix that? You can't. So NamUs is such a tool. Now, a lot of people what people on web sleuths do is when they start looking at these cases, they'll then go on and match those to it and have them sent in to see if it matches. And if it doesn't, they'll put it and they'll put, you know, this so that you don't have to keep matching. It's such a great tool, like I said. You know, you don't like to think that her remains are going to be found. You don't want to be negative like that, but they can be found anywhere. Right, this is 2020. You can put a body wherever you want.
Absolutely.
If you're a Georgia police officer, you're not going to be calling Wyoming about those. No one's going to. That's why it's so important that everything is entered into NamUs. It's just a great tool.
Absolutely.
So what they do on web sleuth, like I said, is they'll literally match up those. I doubt anyone was doing that because they thought that she was just, you know, off on her own willingly. It delayed. It still is delaying so much. And I've talked about it so much. I know they must have heard it already. Just take it off. Like, what are you doing? How long are you going to leave it up there? Are they that stubborn?
It's been posted on their personal Facebook. It's been posted on the media's Facebook. I mean, it's been asked. Just take it down. Retract the statement. Come out. Say, hey, look, we made a mistake. That's not what happened. You know, it's not that hard.
It's almost like they have a personal issue with the girl.
It is, and it's almost like they don't want that statement taken down.
Unfortunately, due to time constraints, we're going to have to end it here, and that means there's going to be a part three with the rest of our conversation. I'm not trying to draw this out. I just don't want this episode is way too long by me cutting it here. It's pretty much an hour. I don't want to do that to people. People lose attention quickly. But going to release part two, three as well in the next couple days, hopefully tomorrow, with the whole thing in a video, which will be on our YouTube, which is Missing Person Cases Network. It will also be on our Facebook, Missing Person Cases Network. You'll be able to catch a sneak peek of it on the Instagram as well, Missing_Persons Network. Now, like I said, we need feedback, comments. What do you guys think? What else would you like us to dig into? The next episode, which will be episode 4, is going to touch on Johnny Lemon and AJ, her boyfriend. And we'll have a sneak peek of that at the end of episode 3, part 3. I know there's just so much information in this case, and I don't want to skimp on it. I don't want to just put something out just to put it out. So the rest of the conversation here, with a little bit of a preview for the following episode, will be in the next couple of days, along with the full thing in a video. So hope you guys enjoyed. Make sure you share it, like it, do what you got to do. Till next time, guys.